I would like to tell you just a wee bit about Lebanon because much of the Middle East is a mystery to many Americans. Lebanon itself is the gateway to the Middle East. It's a beautiful country. There's a verse in Isaiah that says that the Lord is going to make Jerusalem, or the Promised Land, like the glory of Lebanon. And I've often wondered why he didn't choose Lebanon to begin with, because it's really much prettier than Jordan or Syria. It's mountainous, a lot like Colorado. And so I want you to get the picture that I'm in a pretty country and very satisfying to be there from this angle. It's as far as the Middle Eastern countries, it has the highest rate of literacy. Over 50% of the people can speak either English or French, as well as two other languages. So this is an indication of the type of people who live in Lebanon. The other countries, this is not true. Another feature of Lebanon is that it is over 50% Protestant. The other countries are almost entirely Muslim. So this is a reason that we, along with many other missionaries from Europe and America, have chosen Lebanon. It is one of the few countries we can still get into. And then being Protestant, or having so many Protestants there. Now by Protestant I mean Greek Orthodox, Catholics, Maronite, all of these. The Christian, as we know it, this is a very small percentage, of course. Beirut itself is right on the sea, on the beautiful Mediterranean Sea, and it is beautiful. It's everything you've read about and heard about. And as you go out of Beirut, you very quickly come up into a beautiful mountain range. The 6 months out of the year is covered with snow. So you can see that it's not really a too difficult mission field. However, when you arrive in Beirut, in 1 hour's time, you could leave Beirut and drive through pages of history. The further away you get from Beirut, the more back into civilization you are going. I mean, the type of civilization that we are not familiar with. You can go back into villages that are living the same way they lived 100 years ago. Down in Beirut, you will see beautiful girls with always in high heels, never wear flats, always dressed right perfectly, and with the latest hair fashion. And then their cousins back in the country with the long black robes. Well, the Lord has, we feel, led us to Beirut, and I'll explain a little more of that, the reason why. But I'd like to tell you about our first couple of days in Lebanon. We got at the airport, and I looked around and was amazed to discover nice boulevard streets, beautiful buildings, modern apartment buildings. I had no idea it was so pretty. But the senior missionary of the Presbyterian Church, to whom we were going to be looking for direction the first few months, put us in the car and he says, "Now, I'm sure you're not going to want to stay in Beirut. We've decided you should stay up in a little mountain town about an hour's drive from here." Well, I wasn't so sure. He wasn't asking. He was telling us. And he said, "Also, I don't think you even want to stay here at all. I think we might as well go up tonight." So I quickly looked at Beirut as we drove through and on our way up to this little mountain town. And I could spend hours talking about the driving in Beirut, but it was one of the worst rides I have ever had. But I was sure that since the Lord had brought us this far, he certainly wouldn't let us have a car accident on our way to the little town. So we all tried to relax. We got to this little mountain town called Zahle. And those of you who have kept up with us will recognize this name. It is a mixture of the Western way of life and the village life. They're trying hard to be modern but don't quite make it. So it causes a lot of confusion, inefficiency, and so forth. This man drove us to a hotel, and there were hundreds of Arabs milling around, singing loud Arabic music, and of course this babble of Arabic, and it was all very confusing, and they weren't going to let us drive up to the hotel. Well, this man apparently knew his way around the Middle East, and he just started right through the crowd. Well, this was all quite terrifying, and I thought, my goodness, what are we getting into? And then we got into the hotel, the first-rate hotel of Zahle, which would be about a third-rate hotel over here. And we were nicely getting settled when all the lights went out. And it was pitch black and all of these noises down below. And, of course, I thought of all the newspaper articles I'd read about mob riots and what these temperamental people do when they get in a crowd. And I thought, well, this is really a good initiation. I didn't know what was happening, but it was all very interesting. Well, it came to be the norm, I discovered, that not only did the lights go out once a day, but sometimes two and three times a day, you didn't ever have to defrost your refrigerator. It was automatic. Well, now that we've arrived in Zahle and I have you nicely settled up in this little mountain town, I want to come back here to the time just prior to my leaving, so you'll get to know a little bit of what I felt about going overseas. When I married Scotty, I married a missionary, and I knew it. And at the time, I really didn't care. I was still young, had no children, and I honestly had looked forward to a foreign field anyway. But after one, two, three, four children, and a nice suburban home, getting settled, conveniences of America, I began to realize that I didn't want to go overseas. It was a little different with a family. And I knew that we'd be not living in the same kind of situation. So when the time actually came for us to go, I was not as willing, although I was not the kind of person who said they wouldn't go, but I wasn't real eager. And then just prior to our leaving, our youngest boy had 6 months of a long, serious illness. So I was in and out of the hospital for 6 months. We'd go up in the morning and back at noon and back in the afternoon. So physically, I was very tired and emotionally just kind of at the end because of the pressure of the thought of going overseas. So all in all, I wasn't prepared to go overseas. And then to be plopped right up immediately in this kind of very unusual city, I really had to turn to the Lord for grace and for strength. And as I left, I realized, well, I'm not going as Scotty's wife. This isn't enough. This won't take us anywhere. I knew that I had to go as a disciple of Jesus Christ. And I'd like for us this morning to consider some thoughts about discipleship. I want to share with you some experiences on the field as they relate to being a disciple. And if you would turn to Luke 14, this is one of the key passages on discipleship, and we'll look at a couple of verses there. Verse 26 says, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple." Now, I do realize, I mean, I think this is really talking to men, but we as women, as wives, as single girls, need to have the same attitudes of heart. We may not be called in the same way that our husbands and the other men are called, but we are called, nonetheless, to be disciples. And there is a difference between a disciple and a Christian. Not all Christians are disciples. I think we're aware of this. Well, the first thing it says here is that if you don't hate your own father and mother. Well, this was a problem to me. I knew that I wouldn't see my folks for 4 years, and I had to face this. It wasn't so hard for me as it was for the thought of how hard it was for my folks. This was the problem. And then, of course, I have five now, darling, talented, beautiful children. And I want my folks to see them, and I want them to enjoy them. So I knew this would not be true, and pictures just aren't adequate. So this was a problem I faced, and I knew, in a real sense, I had to hate mother and father. And I think some of you have experienced this in different ways. You don't have to go overseas to have this same problem. There are things, maybe a vocation that you're called to, or an area, or just many things that you can do that you do have to make a decision. So it's no different, really, than the decision I had to make. And then it says, mother, or wife, and children. There were many times, my first 2 years in Sahli, that I thought, my, I must hate my children. I wouldn't bring them here. So I would look out at them playing in the dirt with some little dirty children. However, I want to parenthetically say that the Arab people are not, as most commonly thought, too dirty. It depends on their class. Your poor people in America are dirty, as well as overseas. But the Arabs, on a whole, are very clean, and the only reason that the children go around dirty is lack of water. They just don't have the water to take a bath. And they would if they could, and their homes are always spotless. So when I say that, I don't want to leave the wrong impression. I want to give you a fair picture of my country. But there were times, as I said, when I would look at my children, I'd think of what they could have if they were in America. They could have all the activities, the clubs, nice friends, bicycles, tricycles, sidewalks, lawns. Oh, these lawns. This is one thing we just don't have. And all of these things I would think of, and I'd feel sorry for my children. I found out it was unnecessary because they didn't miss them. They just didn't realize what they were missing. It was just mommy that was having the problem. But we lived up on the third floor of an apartment building our first year, and we had a little, about a 3x15 balcony, 3 feet by 15, and this was their play area, other than going down into this happened to be a very dirty street, and I wouldn't usually let them go down. So this first year, it was a problem this way, but I realized that God had called us, and if I was his disciple, that this was just one thing I had to face. And there were, on the other side, many things that made up for this. Then it says that we're to hate our own life. In 1960, just before I left, Lorne Sanney spoke quite, I think 2 or 3 nights, maybe the whole time, on this chapter. And I remember I wrote down a couple questions in the column of my Bible. These questions became very real to me back in those behind the mountain ranges there. One of the questions was, what does my life consist of? The other question is, what can I do without? Well, these I faced many times. What did my life consist of? Well, heretofore, it had consisted of one thing, of schedule, efficiency, organization, knowing that on Monday I could do this, Tuesday I could do this. By Monday, 11 o'clock, I could have the wash done because all I had to do was press a button, and I knew that it would be done. It wasn't quite the same over there. Sometimes at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I would be sitting, studying Arabic, waiting for the electricity to come back on. Or in the middle of the wash, the water would run out. Also in the middle of a shower, the water runs out. And this can be very frustrating. Or washing your hair or something. Now, these were all things that made me face up to, what did my life really consist of? What did I depend on? What did I really need in order to be satisfied and content, and also in order to maintain a household with small children? This was the biggest problem, of course. There were other things that came up. The question, what can I do without? Can I do without modern appliances? I didn't think I could. In fact, my husband, he's a very austere man. He was. He's mellowed with the years. But the only thing he let me take was the dryer. He wouldn't let me take a toaster or any of the little gadgets, you know, that we like around the kitchen. But I did talk him into the dryer, which I'm very grateful because it's been a great help. We did have a Ringer wash machine, and all of our appliances, that, like our dryer, had to work on a bottled gas. Well, I very realistically faced the question, can I do without appliances, when our bottled gas blew up, and I was laid up three months with burns. Well, I did a lot of thinking during that time. These are questions that I'd like to bring before you, because I think here in America, as I've come back and I've seen the trend of America, it's made me stop and think not only for myself, but think, what about the people here? What is our life heading toward? What are we as Christians thinking that we have to have in order to exist? And more than that, what kind of testimony then is this to others? We won't go into that a lot, because I don't have the answer to all these questions. They're just questions that I have thought about. Another thing that faced me over there was friends, lack of having fellowship with people who spoke your own language. I would go visiting in this little Arab town, and for 5 minutes I could say, hello, how are you, nice day, and all of this, and then I was finished, because that was all the Arabic I knew. And for the rest of the time I would just sit and listen to them and watch them smile and watch them laugh and just wish I knew what they were saying. Well, this can be wearing after a few months when there's no one else around us to converse with, especially a woman that you can talk over things with. So this was another problem. But if the Lord calls, we know He gives the grace. And we grow in this grace, or we should grow in the grace. And so I can personally say I'm thankful for every minute of the 2 years, because without it, I know I would have missed many, many lessons and would not have been able to draw upon the grace of the Lord, because I wouldn't have had the opportunity. So I'm very grateful for each of these things. One of the blessings of our time there, and this made everything worthwhile, were five young men. Those of you who have heard my husband, heard him tell about these young men. But at the end of our first year, there were five very keen, intelligent, good character type of fellows who came to Christ. We really believe they're handpicked, because every one of them seemed to be following the Lord, and it seems to be a case where each one of them are going to be used in a definite way. Well, this is encouraging, because we have seen these five men now multiply to 25. And at this time, those of you who know Pete Angier, he is carrying on the follow-up of these men. In fact, several of the 25 came to Christ as a result of his witness, combined with the witness of these other five men. So this was our mission, and this is what we saw accomplished. So actually, I think it erases everything else. It just was worth, as they say, every minute of it for this. Verse 28 says, for which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost? We know that it's costly to build towers. And if we're going to be building towers in our own lives, if we're going to become towers, it's going to be costly, or we know that it won't be lasting. And also in our ministry, whatever we build, it's going to cost. And I want to say again here that each of you here in America, I hope I can get this across. I've tried to with every group I've spoken to. You have problems and you have difficulties and you have to grow. The only difference between you and me is that our problems are different. And I am not going to say that mine are more difficult, because I don't believe it. I believe some of the things you go through in becoming real disciples and in growing are just as difficult. We tend to think in America that, oh, the poor missionary out there on the field. But this is not true. These battles are spiritual battles, and they're just as hard here or over there. And when you can adjust to the different geographical location, which comes quickly, well, from then on, it's the very same thing. So I hope you don't disassociate yourself with me, because I don't believe it's any different. I would like to share a little bit with you on my thoughts coming here. Now, I don't know exactly. I know I'm treading on ground that maybe I have to be awfully careful. But I have gotten some impressions since coming to America, and I'd like to share them with you. There's a phrase from a verse that says, there is no thought of God in their heart. Well, this has been going through my mind every time I go anywhere. I see it in persons' lives. I see it in the overcrowded, always busy shopping centers. I see it in the smart, elegant two-car homes. I see it in the two- and three-car homes. There just is no thought of God. There isn't time. You can't maintain two homes and think of God. It takes too long to go through Sears catalog and plan your room and the colors. You just don't have time to think of God and what He has. And I think you people are facing one of the most difficult mission fields in the world. I feel it's more difficult than Lebanon in many ways. There is a trend towards materialism over there, but it's not nearly as bad here. And I feel that you people, by your witness of your discipline lives, also the witness of you, the trend in your life, I would really be careful if I were here. Would I have to have everything that my next door neighbor has? I think it's becoming a real problem. And if we're not going to be different, then they're not going to come to us. And if our lives aren't showing something unusual or different than them, then I don't know what witness we can have. This is just a few thoughts that I wanted to share with you because I want you to get the picture now in Lebanon. 2 years ago, we moved from this little mountain village. I think the Lord thought I had learned my lesson, so it was time to go on. My poor husband had to suffer all that for me. No, he was already adjusted to a foreign field, and I needed it. I really did. And I think any American who's has any of the culture in her at all, it's good for them to be in a situation like that. But we did, the Lord did lead us to move down, not into Beirut, but outside of Beirut in a little village. Again, it's not a modern village, but our home is lovely. It's a miracle provision from the Lord. It's a wonderful story. If I had time, I'd tell you, but I won't. It's not modern in the way we know it, but it's very adequate. And the thing I like about it most is that it's big. With five children, a big home is a blessing. They can be at one end of the house, and I don't even hear them up at the other end. So I appreciate this, and I feel the Lord has given it to us. And we are grateful for it. So now our ministry is a little different. My husband's main thrust will be now to the university students. There is a big university in Beirut. It is one of the largest. In fact, there is only one other as large, and that's in Cairo. And so students from all of the Middle Eastern countries come there, as far east as Pakistan and India, and some even from Africa, who come to Beirut. So it is a real crossroads, and these countries like Syria, Jordan, Iraq, Iran, that we cannot get into, we have the students right there. And they are of the caliber in class that they're open. Because they're seeking the education from the West, they're also open to the religion of the West, and they're a much easier group of people to reach than if we were to go right into the countries themselves. So this is my husband's main ministry for the next few years, as you will be praying for us. You can remember this. Now, all of these students speak perfect English, so this is not a problem. However, we feel we've got to get Arabic in order to help them with their spiritual problems afterwards. I mean, you just can't talk about things of the heart in a foreign language. They, even though they speak good English, it's still a technical language to them. It's not the language of their heart. So we do have to get Arabic for that reason. My ministry will continue to be the home because the children are still small. And Lebanon is not like countries like the Philippines and on further east where you can get a maid for $15 a month. We can get a maid for $100 a month. It just isn't provided for in our budget. So we do have a cleaning lady who comes in, and if they come in one day, this is reasonable, and this is a big help. And I feel it's all the help I need as long as I'm not out in a ministry as some of the other missionary wives have to be because of their boards. But we feel that this is where the Lord wants me. But my big prayer request would be, again, the language. I have not been able to work on it because of, I think, maybe what I told you is described perhaps well enough why I have not been able to. I can make my way around in the market and say 5 minutes talking, but that's all. So I would really like to be able to spend a lot of time next year in the language. There's one other ministry that I think I'll share with you, since this has gone faster than I had hoped for. We hadn't gone to an English-speaking church for 2 years. I played the organ in Arabic, can you imagine? And I also led the choir in Arabic. It was a very small Protestant church, so they weren't too particular. But it was a blessing to me to be able to contribute to the worship of God through music, at least. But we were really hungry to go to an English service, so we chose a church in Beirut. It's called the Community Church. And the name implies that it's community, and this is just what it is. They're all denominations, but it does tend toward the liberal side. The government of the church is Presbyterian. It's not called that, but it is. And it's a very good opportunity to just meet many of the Americans in Beirut, of which there are about 5,000. These Americans, of course, are the elite. They work with the oil companies, the businessmen, doctors, professors, this type of person. Well, after the first year, I thought, well, now I probably better try to get to know some of these ladies. I hadn't been around American women, and I thought I'll forget how to act and forget all my social graces. So I decided I'd go to a circle meeting. And the first time there, I noticed that all the women were just about my age. I think the Lord led in this, as I saw later. They went around the circle and told what their husbands did, the manager of the 7-Up bottling company, the head surgeon at AUB Hospital, vice president of Tapline, and they got around to me. And I said, well, my husband's a missionary, and he teaches history part-time at Agassiz College. Well, this was all fine, but I wondered if I would be accepted back into this very elite group. But then they started choosing chairman of the calling committee and the party committee and this committee and that committee. And I was sort of sitting there, I wonder if I'm going to come here again. I don't know. And all of a sudden I heard the lady say, well, now we need a program chairman, and I'd like Mrs. Scott to be. Well, I really wasn't paying much attention, and I was so surprised. And I said, oh, I couldn't. I thank you very much, but I just don't have the time. I have 5 children. I'm studying Arabic and so on and so forth, and I just don't think I could do justice to it, and I'd rather not get involved. Well, you just wait. Wait till we decide what the program is, and then see if you can do it. So I, well, okay, that was fair enough. So they decided, one lady, a very chic-looking lady smoking a cigarette, said, I think I'd like to do Bible study this year. Well, a couple other ladies said, yes, I would too. Well, I was beginning to get interested. So then they decided, unanimously, they decided, I had nothing to do with it, that they wanted to study John. Well, I thought I could arrange for this. I said, no, it probably wouldn't take too much time. I think I could do this. So I felt the Lord just really sort of plop this into my lap, because it came as a complete surprise. And I honestly was avoiding too much contact with Americans, because you can get involved when you're there to reach the Arabs. But when the Lord led in such a definite way, I felt, well, I just can't refuse, so I gladly accepted. So through the last year, it's been a real privilege for me and an opportunity to go through the Gospel of John with these women. We stuck to the theme of what does Christ claim to be? What does he say he is? And we avoided all theology, because I knew there were many shades of different theology in the group. So we just talked about Christ. And after all, Christ is Christianity, so this wasn't difficult. And I shared freely my own experience of how Christ met my needs as a mother, a lady overseas, a wife, and so forth. Well, at the end of the year, I feel that there now are about 4 women who I trust will come to a real commitment to Christ. You could never insinuate that they're not already a Christian, and I wouldn't say it either. I wouldn't be surprised if some of them will be in heaven, just. But as far as a committed walk or knowing anything about what Christianity is, you know the kind of person I'm talking about, so I don't need to describe them. So these are the women, then, that I feel that the Lord has given me a little bit of a ministry with. And about a month before I left, the president of the association came up and said, Mrs. Scott, we've decided that we'd like you to be vice president of the whole association in charge of all of the programs for all of circles. Well, again, I was really taken back. I was really surprised. And I just said, well, why? I haven't been that active. I didn't go to any of the activities other than the circle. And the report was that the women in our group felt for the first time they were experiencing and knowing what Christianity really meant, and they wanted the other women to know too. So I would really appreciate your prayers this next year. I'm going to have to walk very carefully, of course, and it's good for me. I can't use any of the old cliches. I can't even use NAV Bible studies. I have to make up my own. And I would appreciate your prayer for this opportunity. Now the last thought, down in verse 34 of Luke 14, it says, salt is good, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltness be restored? Now I thought, well, what does this have to do with being a disciple? But I can see, a disciple is different. If we're following Christ, we should be different. Our lives will be salty. And to these women in Beirut, apparently they have gotten everything they need. Their salaries are twice what they would be if they were here. They all have 2-3 maids. They live a very high standard. And I think they have realized that they need something. And I would like to say here, I think if I were following the same pattern, if I was living like they were, I wonder if I would be salt to them. I think by the very fact that I could do without and still maintain a triumphant and a victorious life, I think this was salt to them. And I would like to just challenge you this morning, again, with your contacts, the women, your neighbors, and so forth, that if we've lost our flavor, if we've lost our taste, well, we might as well be thrown out because we won't be of any use. And as disciples, as we are, we need to have these attitudes of heart. And again, I would just like to say that I feel each of you in your own situations and each of you with your own peculiar problems, you face these same things and need this same attitude as I do. We have time for a few questions, if you have any. I don't think it means an emotional attitude, such as I don't love them anymore. But when Christ puts demands on us, I have discovered that the demands draw from our emotions so that we appear even to others, perhaps, to hate them. But I don't think it means an emotional that I hate you, but that we would disown them. I mean, against Christ, putting them against Christ, we would choose Christ.
Pride, I don't know. Less dearly,
then. Pardon?
Pride less dearly.
Yes, this would be good, yes. No, yes.
Jim, what would be your thought and love for this coming year
now? This still has to be worked out, and I'm working on that during my time here. I'm making out a syllabus, the study of the Christian woman as she relates to 10 different areas, and I'm looking at material from C.S. Lewis, Paul Tournier, Rule Howe, some of these authors that they will accept. I'm sneaking in Eugenia Price and a few others that they don't know. And what I'm doing is getting research material on each of these topics, and then I will get together with the discussion group leaders they choose and we will discuss it. So it probably will be handled to some extent maybe by women who don't know the Lord. I do know of a couple who have been chosen who are real Christians, so this will help. But I'm just, the prayer of my heart is that the whole atmosphere of the whole association will at least grow to be more spiritual, because it's in a, let's say, a liberal church. And I think the Lord can move. This is my only hope. If the Lord doesn't work, it's hopeless, because it's no cut and dried thing. I don't go with the first step and the second step and the third step, and it's going to be a real experience of trusting on the Lord in His direction. But I will be directing the leaders of the groups. Yes. We came just for the summer. We like Lebanon so well now that we didn't even want to come a year. And so we chose to come for the summer. We're right now here in Colorado Springs for another week, but we have been traveling all across America. I meet my husband at major stops, and then he goes this way while I go this way. And we just kind of catch up with each other. And we'll be back in Lebanon in October, by October 1st. I would appreciate prayer for the rest of our time. I don't enjoy traveling with five children. The problem is that I have to keep washing and ironing clothes. They always have to look so nice. You know, I can't let them go in their dirty blue jeans. And so it's keep me busy.
Are your children of school age, and what do you do with them?
Yes, we've had them in Arabic schools. We chose this because we knew we were going to be living there 15 years or more. And we wanted them to feel a part of Lebanon. This was one of my problems the first 2 years. I, all day long, these dear little kids hearing Arabic, and it is difficult. But after about the first 6 months, they caught on, and I don't think it's any problem now. However, this year, we're changing them to a British school there, and I think it'll be good. The ages are 9 to 2. Kifik, barhava, kifik, alhamdulillah, khalas. There are several. Of course, the most common one is Allah that you hear, the Muhammad. This is the same one. Lord is Arab. But they talk more about God than they do. You might be interested to know that I have to wash all my vegetables and fruits and Tide. the lettuce, it leaves something to be desired. I would like to mention, I have this down to mention that on the positive side, I have learned very, very much about people. The one big lesson is that all over the world, we're all the same. The color of our skin is different, but we are the same. The Lebanese people are the warmest, most hospitable people. I think they even would leave Texans and Oklahomans to shame. I really do. they have a knack. You would fit well over there. But this is their life, visiting, entertaining. And I, as I say, I've learned a lot from this, and giving, doing, unselfishly giving. They give out a need, we give out a want. And it's a real challenge to me and a real blessing. And it's been good for our kids. Our kids have come back, and almost every day they'll say, when are we going visiting? Why doesn't someone come visit us? They've really been shocked at the lack of people. Because now when I go back to Lebanon, our house will be full, just full. Welcome home, welcome home. So glad you're here. You know, boy, we'll feel it too. We'll feel we're glad we're here. And I know this is just a different way of life. I haven't taken it personally. But I know that we get so busy, and this has been a real blessing to me to be in this slow, relaxed culture where they really enjoy life and people and each other.
Could you tell us more about how you conduct your home?
In Sahlid, I used to go down and see a half of a cow hanging on a big hook covered with flies and bees, and I would say, I want that piece, and he'd hack it off. No steaks, no roast, no chops. They didn't know what this meant. You just get a hunk of meat, and you take it home, and you try to do something with it. And this was also part, one time I questioned myself, well, my life as a homemaker is certainly not here what I would like. I can't plan tasty meals with different kinds of meat each night and all. I just go get a hunk of meat. And so this was not too easy at first. They do have an abundance of fruits and vegetables in cheap, good. But it's all from scratch, and this takes a lot of time. You have to, what do you call it, shell the peas and string the beans and everything. And this is part of the reason that you need help. And part of the reason when I didn't have help that I was pretty busy. So, but we enjoy it, and you get used to this. This is not a difficulty to me at all now. It was. Although there are times when I wish I could go down and buy a package of frozen peas. I can. You can buy anything you want in Beirut. Absolutely anything. But you pay for it. And you pay 2 and 3 times the price. And when we have American guests come through, I was always delighted because my husband would let me go down and just get all the American food, Jell-O and Dream Whip and everything, and I'd really have a ball working up a real American food. We like the Arabic food, though, very much, and we eat it about 3 times a week. And this, too, it takes a lot of time to prepare, so I can't do it every day. Meat with rice, mainly, vegetable, meat, rice combination, kind of a stew-like, but it's good. Mostly lamb. But now in Beirut, let me add, yes, I shouldn't leave the wrong impression. In Beirut, I found a store where I can go, and they have a showcase, and they have the meat all cut up. In fact, now I can buy fillets and top round for the same price I pay for hamburger. So it's not too difficult. Now we eat good meat and well-cut meat. It's old cows, but never mind.
Joan, is your husband here now, or will he be this week?
No, he won't. He has been here a good part of last month, and now he's down in Texas and Oklahoma, then up the Midwest, and then we're going east. Then we're finished from here. Well, thank you, and I would appreciate your prayers for us now that you know a little bit about us and a little bit about our needs, and I appreciate this time meeting you.